When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be confusing. Like Swedish techno confusing.
Bark, bark, meow, meow. Dance with me, purple cow. Bark, bark, meow, meow. Ooh, you lovely cow.
Geico makes it easy. With 24/7 access, all you have to do is go to Geico.com and you could save money on car insurance. It just makes sense. Unlike, you know.
Dance with me, purple cow. I like your moves.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, my name is Connie Going, and I am so excited to have you here at Adoption Focus. Adoption Focus is a blog talk radio show sponsored by Adoption Associates. Adoption Associates is a nonprofit adoption agency whose mission is to promote domestic and international adoption, support birth mothers and adoptive families along the way. They are located in Michigan, in Jenison, Lansing, Farmington Hills, and Saginaw. Established in 1990, they have created well over 5,000 adoptive placements. That is so exciting. Today, we have the honor and the privilege of talking to Anna Walton, and she's a psychotherapist, and in her practice, Thrive Counseling. She has offered to be here and share with us. We're going to talk a little bit about grief and adoption. And she has a wealth of experience and knowledge, and we are just so thrilled to have you here. Anna, are you on the line?
I am.
Yay! I will share with everyone, we had an attempt earlier in this year and some connectivity problems because she was up in the woods of northern Michigan. And and I know that's beautiful. And for those of you who listen to the show regularly or those of you who don't, you know that I'm in South Florida. So we're worlds away, but we come together to talk about adoption, talk about the issues in adoption and things that we are just passionate about. So Anna, tell us a little bit about your practice and what in adoption just really is something that you love to focus on.
Okay. I have a group practice in the southern end of Lansing, Michigan, and we make up quite a diverse group of practitioners, all of which specialize in trauma-focused treatment. And a passion that I certainly have, and some of the workers that I have here as well, is foster care, adoption, and working with every facet that's involved in that process. And so we work with adoptees. We work with adoption parents that are struggling with their adopted children. And we also work moms pre-placement and developing their adoption plan, as well as post-care. So we just are available to help them through that process, and I have networked with Adoption Associates to be able to provide those services. And you know, on a personal note, I grew up in a foster adoptive home, and my parents adopted, and I have also fostered and adopted children myself. So I have some personal experience as well in this field, and so that's really where we come from. And I just wanted to be able to share today some of the needs in regards to the birth mom. I think that's really a topic that doesn't have as much attention as it probably should. The social stigmas in regards to the birth mom, the lack of research and care that's available, the resources that are lacking, and then the birth moms themselves, just the fact that they are such an amazing, amazing, courageous group of women that really should be honored and supported. And we need to be more aware of their needs and be more in tune to what they are doing and the fact that they're going to be living with this the rest of their lives as well. So
Anna,
basically, that's what I'd like to talk about.
Well, you are our expert in many, many, many ways. And, you know, why do you think, I mean, when you look at the history of domestic adoption and you and adoption as a whole, there's a stigma that I know we both talked about being very passionate about changing about birth mothers, about the secrecy, about the how society perceives them. And when you truly embrace adoption, you know that the core of all adoptions are the birth parents and just the selflessness that they exhibit. Tell us a little bit about like how that's come through your years of practice and where we're at right now.
Well, we have made some progress, but we certainly have a very, very, very long way to go. There still is today a very strong social stigma against birth moms and just the overall perception that those who decide to choose adoption as a birth plan, that they're, you know, that there must be factors that are, you know, relevant to their decision-making process that are negative. And unfortunately, that's not the truth. That's not the truth at all. And so, you know, we have a long ways to go in bringing awareness that this is definitely a gift-giving decision. However, it does have some pretty severe consequences to the birth moms. It's overlooked. And even the birth moms themselves are often very unaware of what those consequences potentially could be for them. And so we just have to have that conversation and continue to offer them that support and understanding that we can't put a birth mom in a box, you know, and
right.
say, well, it must be that, you know, they're unfit or that they're not stable or they don't have parenting skills or that, you know, they're a drug addict or, you know, we have all these different ideas of what might have led to this situation. And the truth is that the majority of the birth moms I've had the honor of working with, that isn't the case at all.
Right.
You know, and, you know, a lot of these women are professional women. Some of them are married and have families. And, you know, so there's all different circumstances. There's all different reasons as to why they make this choice. And sometimes those reasons are extremely positive, loving, faith, spiritual reasons. And
I agree.
And so we need to honor that and know that even when the circumstances are extremely positive for the birth mom and they're very much being selfless and believe themselves to be giving an amazing gift to another family, and even when the adoption is very open and there's a new relationship that's established with the adoptive family and the birth mom has the opportunity to still somehow be in that child's life in some way, there's still a loss. There is still a loss, and there is still going to be points in that birth mother's life where they deal with that loss. And so that's really, I guess as a mental health practitioner, I want to be able to bring light to that this birth mom, it's not a one-time giving. It's not a one-time loss. It's a
right.
forever gift. It's a forever loss. And they will forever question that decision and wonder if, did I make the best choice for my child?
And Anna, I think coming into it as an adoptive parent is coming into it, to truly understand the loss that a birth mother experiences throughout her lifetime. And to really encourage that openness if that is what both parties want and how healthy that can be for the child.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it very much can be. You know, there are certain situations where the birth mom may not want to have an open adoption or may feel that may be too painful, or maybe they have an idea that they will be able to better grieve or move forward if they don't have that connection.
Right.
But most of the time you will find that if you follow them long enough, that eventually they will have a different experience. And at some point, they may feel that maybe that wasn't necessarily the truth. And you know, during the time of doing the placement, that's how how they felt, or the support they were receiving at that time. Maybe that's what they were hearing, and so they just went along with it. Or maybe it really met their needs at that moment. But, you know, the reality is, at some point, there's going to be that desire for connection because it's just wired in us biologically and spiritually. So absolutely open adoption is extremely valuable and important to the birth mom to and to the child as well. And that attachment is, we could get into attachment theory itself, but it's so, so important.
That adoptive family can understand and understand the whys and not be afraid. Because in reality, in my 30 years experience, I have never, in working from a time period before we really did open adoptions, I've never had a birth parent in my experience come and try to take a child after they were adopted, like try to come in and, run away with a child. I think that when you do an adoption plan the right way, which mm-hmm. I believe in adoption associates, that they really work with that birth mother to make sure this is her decision and her plan,
mm-hmm.
That those instances are so incredibly rare. But it's just always this fear when you work with adoptive families that they have. And mm-hmm. I don't know if in your experience you've had a different, but I mean, that's what I've seen as a whole is that, even for birth parents who go through a removal situation in the child welfare system, there is a lot of unresolved issues. It's definitely not nearly as healthy as domestic adoption as far as how the children come. But again, if you can give everyone the pieces and you can work that out, it's healthier for everybody.
Absolutely. Yeah. We don't want birth moms going through this process without having those conversations or feeling coerced into doing something that they're not fully and completely committed to. So it is extremely important that the agency takes that responsibility very seriously, that we do have a very open and honest conversation about the process, that we validate all of those concerns and fears, that they're very, very normal fears, even though we don't see a lot of that happening, and it's extremely rare for a birth mom to, do something like that. That would be, I've never seen it. I don't know of any
right.
actual stories of that happening. However, I do validate that as a true fear. Even as
right.
a foster adoptive mom myself,
mm-hmm.
I remember having that fear, even though there was nothing to validate it.
Exactly.
It's a normal part of that process. And there's other fears. There's other concerns that your child isn't ever going to really attach to you or love you as much as they will always love their birth parent, or that at some point your adopted child is going to want to seek out the birth mom and abandon you as their parent, and there's all of those fears. And even in an open adoption case, you may find that during I have had this particular experience quite often, where you have an open adoption plan throughout the pregnancy, the birth mom and the adoptive parents they'll form a really amazing bond and a relationship, and even through delivery and all the way up until it's time to sign off on rights and finalize the adoption. And even after that, those first few months are so crucial, right? Where everything seems to be very, very, very positive and open and everybody's connected and it's the best case scenario.
Right.
I have seen where that's the case. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, birth mom will come into a session and say, I don't know what's really happened, but something shifted where now I kind of feel like adoptive mom or adoptive dad doesn't really want me around, or they really are uncomfortable around me, or they're treating me differently than they did before.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, again, that is a birth mom, their worst fears are starting to surface. The things that they didn't really talk about before and deal with
right.
appropriately are starting to surface, and it's skewing the perception of the relationship.
Right.
And And it may not be that they're really being treated differently. And it may not be that the adoptive family really doesn't want them around. It's their fear is overcoming their perception of reality.
Right.
And vice versa, the adoptive family may not really have a clear idea of the roles and how they're supposed to incorporate birth mom. And, you know, and they have a fear that maybe they are not going to hold up to birth mom's expectations or standards, or they're going to fail birth mom in some way, because they do recognize birth mom as a very valuable part of this relationship, and that, you know, that they did give an amazing gift, and, you know, that they are a very intricate part of this, and they value that. And so they're kind of concerned that, well, what if my parenting or whatever I'm doing with this, you know, beautiful child, that somehow birth mom's going to think I'm not owning up to my end of the bargain. So there can be all
that.
Of that going
mm-hmm.
on. Yeah, all that
I
going
see
on.
That.
Really, again, more need for conversation, more need
yes.
for counseling, more need for open communication, and always keeping a focus of, we need to remember that it's what's in the best needs of this child. What's going to make... Yeah, so keeping that focus in mind and recognizing, you know, we have feelings. We're human. We're going to feel things. And we just need to talk through it and work through it and continually try to improve those relationships.
I so agree with that. And I feel like adoptive parents, their fear of not being the parent that is deserving of this child, deep down
mm-hmm.
inside. And when that child, we know that you have the baby phase, and, you know, there's the little infant phase, and a lot of families who've had infertility, they fantasize about what that's going to be like. And, you know, there's loss for them, too, in adoption, because nobody as a parent in any form knows how hard it's going to be until they're actually doing it.
Hardest job on earth, right?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And you can imagine it, but we have these fantasies. And when those fantasies aren't exactly like we've imagined them, then we feel like we're failing. So it's even doubly harder on an adoptive family in any realm, because failure, you have this honor of raising someone else's biological child. And to fail is not an option. And so, but to reach out could mean you're a failure too.
Mm-hmm.
In their minds. And so to kind of open, I love what you said about openness in those conversations and making those real, because we have to keep talking. You know, and even for those who reach out to birth parents, there may be a time for maybe a closed adoption or adoption that came through dependency system where you don't have contact, but your child is of an age to where the world of Facebook opens up and they seek out, and you've got to step in as a parent and make the best decisions to where
mm-hmm.
You have to talk about those things. You can't deny them.
Right.
And remember that you are the parent and you are raising that child with all the love you've always wanted to have a child, you know, all the love you want to share. So
mm-hmm.
and trying to be that best parent ever. So, but nobody's
absolutely.
Perfect.
And the reality is that there's going to be trauma. There's going to be trauma. And I think, you know, again, like you said, not being in this fantasy bubble, you know, like we have to recognize that it is traumatic for the birth mom. It is traumatic for the adoptive child. It's traumatic for the adoptive parent. Like there is trauma. That doesn't mean that we aren't going to have a beautiful family experience, and it doesn't mean that the child and the family can't work through that trauma, but to pretend like it's not going to happen, like, you know, I'm just going to love them and everything's going to be perfect, and this child, you know, because they're never neglected, they're never abused, they've never experienced any hardship, they're not going to have any trauma behaviors. That is going to set yourself up for some really, really, really hard reality checks. Because the truth is that there's trauma, and that can happen in the womb.
I think people don't realize that. I think that people
mm-hmm.
do not talk about that enough. They do not realize that. Working in both spectrum, I will guide families in different directions, and I have parents that come and they are ready to adopt older children, and we talk about that. And then I have families that clearly need to do a domestic adoption, and we talk about, you know, what that's going to be like. And I think that simplicity of all I need to do is love that child, but recognizing that trauma, and the key is trauma, and loss mm-hmm. and attachment happens in all spectrums of the adoption to
right.
the child. So it doesn't matter how you're adopting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, recognizing too, well, a big piece that has really helped me as a professional with trauma is understanding that trauma can be genetically passed on as well, and mm-hmm. and understanding it's in our DNA. It's not just experiential. It's not just what you've experienced. It's literally in our DNA, and it unfolds in our genograms. And so that mother may have had a really traumatic childhood, you know, or maybe some traumas to their even their young adulthood, and then all of that is wound in her system. And so she then has a pregnancy and some stress around that pregnancy and making these decisions and, you know, all the normal fears that come with that. The baby can be bathed in cortisol. And so even though healthy, you know, she's eating right, she's getting great care, she's got great support, there's still the potential of that trauma to be passed on into that child's DNA. And again, that baby can be very healthy. The baby can overcome that trauma. It requires an extremely loving, safe environment with parents that are trauma informed, that are willing to do the trauma work. And then we can have a very positive outcome. And just knowing and educating yourself on what trauma behaviors look like and what to do with those. And one of the big things is that every trauma expert that I have studied under, and there's lots mm-hmm. of them, we're really expanding in the trauma psychoeducation today and what we're learning
yeah.
with brain imaging and all this. This is just fascinating time to be living
in. I know. I'm so great.
You know, especially for us neuroscience geeks, right? Like, we are learning so much about trauma and how it's impacting brain development and how it's impacting child development. And we now know that trauma can it really comes out from around age, you know, usually around age 2 is a time that we see quite a bit of manifestation in children. The trauma starts to unfold because that's an age where children are learning language and they're starting to, you know, there's different developmental milestones that are happening. And so those genotypes are starting to unravel. Then we have another burst of it in adolescence. So a lot of adoptive parents, and I was guilty of this myself, you get a child and you have many years of amazing behaviors. Child is seemingly very healthy, attached, and bonded, doesn't present with any issues, and then bam, you know, they hit 16
yep.
and their head spins off, right? And you go, what happened? You know, why all of a sudden is this child, you know, acting this way? Well, it's because it was stored there all along, and now it's unraveling, and we need to deal with it. And it's not all hope is lost. It's, okay, I'm informed. I was prepared. I knew this was coming, and I have the tools that I need to be able to help this child and continue to foster healthy development, and we're going to work through this trauma, and I'm going to be understanding and compassionate and loving, and I'm going to keep this child safe, and I'm going to give them their story. I'm not going to hide their story. I'm going to give them their story so that they know the truth of the love that's in this household and the fact that they do have life and purpose and identity. And so that's really where I come from as a practitioner when I work with families in this situation is do not be afraid to talk about these things. Tell the story. Do it in a developmentally appropriate way. You got to know where your child is and what they can understand. But be sensitive to that. But you also need to be open and honest with them and make sure that you're constantly validating their feelings and what's coming up for them. And I think it's the same with the birth mom. Same thing. Follow them through the lifespan because we have new research showing that birth moms can choose birth plan, do amazingly well for decades, and then they hit their elderly stages when they hit that new psychosocial development, and all of a sudden, boom, all that guilt and shame and what ifs and fears and whatever can surface. And so, again, that trauma had been stored there all along, and now it's coming to the surface, and it's needing to be dealt with. And so just understanding that, you know, this is this is a, it's a big deal, and we got to be willing to talk about it and address it in a loving way.
And I think that's the key, is to help people understand. And that's why I love the ability to be able to talk to you on this show, because people will listen live, but then we'll also have, it'll be on the website, and people will be able to pull it up and listen again in the archived versions. Because I don't think, I think we're on the tip of the iceberg. When we talk about trauma, when we talk about it having a genetic connection, you know, I always think that even if it's the hardest thing you do as an adoptive parent, the healthiest thing I can do is embrace my children's birth parents, in no matter what realm you're in, because it reflects upon them how I love their birth parents.
Absolutely. It's part of who they are. It's part of their identity. If you make them out to be a villain and hate them, then you're going to hate me, and there's something wrong with me.
And I always have people who, yeah, absolutely. And I always have people say, well, how do I, especially if there's been a very traumatic birth mother or birth parent involved, in whether it's domestic or child welfare, and they say, how do I tell them that their mom had this issue? And you know, the bottom line, you can't erase the facts of their of who they are. And what
right.
it is, just because mom had this issue doesn't mean they, but by not talking about it, when they hit puberty and they're looking in that mirror and they're separating from you and they're trying to find who they are, much healthier to walk up to that child and say, you know, you have eyes. You have these beautiful blue eyes that are so much like your birth mom. And to have had that time to be able to say that and make a healthy image, if, you know, and help them develop that, because there are so many questions. It's the what ifs that haunt us. It's like those little monsters that hide in the closet and they pop out and, you know, did they love me? Why did they give me away? Which we know is not how it necessarily happens. And you know, and using the right terminology from the time they're little. And a lot of times, I don't know if in practice you get this, but we get a lot of families, even on dependency, where kids were adopted a little bit older in the toddler stage, and they say, we haven't told them they're adopted. And I kind of have to say to them in the support group, I'm like, but you're white and she's black. Why haven't you told her she was adopted? I don't understand. You know, to make that adoption work. And I almost feel like with every adoptive family, we should give them like a gift basket that has these books in it, depending on the age of the child they talk with. So when the time comes right, there are, you know, great books. I'll put a plug in for Tapestry, Tapestry adoption books there. You can pull up Amazon and put it in. But look at those books that talk about where you, and it's not too early to start.
No.
You know, to
no,
have
and
those
especially if you frame it, if you frame it very positively with your truth. I mean, the truth is, as an adoptive parent, this was a gift to you. This was a miracle. This was an answer that you needed. Like, this was not, you know what I mean? So you can frame it in such a way to your child that this is an amazing, amazing thing. So the more that you frame it in that positive framework, your child is going to believe that. Children are very, very, very malleable. They are, that's our job as parents, is we're training them up, you know, and they're very like little sponges, and they're going to just believe it with this childlike faith, whatever they hear from you. And if you frame it when they're little as being a fantastic story of love and grace, and you know, and that, you know, you're just a little miracle to us, and we're just so excited, and your birth mom did such an amazing thing, and you know, and you frame it right, that child is going to believe that to their core. But if you don't address it, then you're right, when they hit a certain age and they discover it some way, they're going to automatically assume that it must have been so awful that we couldn't talk about it. It must have been an awful story. And no matter how much you try at that point to make it out to be, well, no, it was a gift and whatever, they're not going to believe you because you didn't take the time to establish that foundation. So very, very, very important to do that, to give a child their story. We do it with our own birth children. We tell them their story from the time they're born. You know, we tell them how much, we tell them about, you know, their birth story. We do. If you think about it, you know,
oh, yeah.
Family,
I mean,
they tell their children about their story.
And I always have these panic calls, as especially for children that are adopted at birth, at very, very young, and they go, okay, she's going into first grade now. We think it's time. And our kindergarten, and we
mm-hmm.
have to do a family tree, or someone will be pregnant and she's asking questions, why, how, what it was like in my tummy. And I'm like, just start talking. You're not going to mess this up if you're honest. You know how
mm-hmm.
to talk to your child. Just talk from your heart.
Right.
And they're going
mm-hmm.
to feel that. But they have this huge fear. They're not going to do it right. And that's why being a component and an advocate for open adoption, you know, if that's something that the birth parent is in the direction they're going, because it is so healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And people will say it. And let's talk a little bit about this. People will say, as they're heading into it and birth mothers coming into it, they think that, well, won't they be confused? Won't they be confused? When I have to introduce or explain to her friends that she has, you know, this person and this person in her life. And how do you work with that as a therapist? How do you educate them about that?
So, you know, I guess I would need more information in the situation, but really one of the big things is, you know, having been a foster mom myself and having had children, that's been a real situation, adopting children out of foster care, where they still have connection, because I adopted teens out of foster care, which I think
me too,
you also adopted teens, right?
Yeah.
And so at that point, they very much know their entire birth family. If you live in a small town, the whole community knows, the school knows, you know, you have a name change, everybody knows. And so and there's times where I've had kids where they absolutely did not want their friends to know that they were in foster care or that they were adopted. And they were scared to death that they would be treated differently at school, that their friends would ask questions about their birth family, that there would be that kind of confusion. And so, yeah, we have to have those conversations and how to address those issues. And, you know, I think one of the things with the families and now with the parents, I'll say, look, I don't know about you, but I've had lots of mamas in my lifetime. You know, I remember attaching to women in my lifetime where I would call them mom for no reason. You know, you go through those teenage years where you start to call your best friends mom, and, you know, you may have teachers that pour into you. You might have a spiritual mom at church. You might have, you know, you get married and you have a mother-in-law. You know, you're going to have different mothers throughout your lifetime. That's just part of being a collective community. But you will always know who your primary caregivers are. And that doesn't have anything to do with genetics. It doesn't have anything to do with who did labor and delivery. It has to do with who was there rocking you to sleep when you were sick. Who was there taking you back and forth to doctor's appointments and, you know, making sure that you got your homework done and, you know, doing all those things that a parent does. And that's who your child is going to know who their primary caregiver. And sometimes that's an adoptive mom. Sometimes it's a foster mom. Sometimes it's a grandparent. Sometimes it's, you know, different people take different roles in their lives. And so I often will just encourage families to say, look, your child knows who their primary caregiver is. They know who their real mom and dad are. That doesn't mean that they can't also have a loving relationship with the person that chose life for them and love them so much that recognize that their life mattered and wanted them to have everything that the child could have and does have. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, recognizing that and having that conversation and saying, and sometimes birth children do end up at some point having a very unique relationship with their birth mothers or birth fathers
mm-hmm.
and are able to manage that quite well. And it doesn't take away from the love that they have with their current parents.
Right.
You know, and I just say that, you know, I get married, I have a mother-in-law, they become a mom to me. That doesn't mean I lose my mom. It's an addition.
And you know, I try to tell my boys is you can't have enough love. I'm a
single,
and I think that it takes a lot of people to raise children, and that I need. I mean, I love having their connections, whether it was their mentor or it was somebody that steps up and says, I'm willing to be there for your family. I'm willing to be there for your children. And we just keep extending our family. And I think adoption on every realm is like that. I love to see adoptive families connect to each other. I love to see them share those relationships.
Share support. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because you can become very isolated as an adoptive family. I love to see birth moms and birth parents come together and support, because their experiences, you think you're the only one going through this. And when you open up and you meet another person, and literally, I think in the world of adoption, I could walk into the post office and say the word adoption, and six people would have a connector to it. We just don't talk about it all the time. And so you find those common bonds and those connectors, and you really become healthier in doing that. But the more love, the better. And, you know, I am honored to be my children's mom. They call me a lot of different things. I get called, but they are.
Any mom knows that experience, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing is that I know I'm their mom. I'm raising them. I'm taking a responsibility for them, and I'm loving them. But their birth mom, and one of their birth mothers is now deceased, and he didn't even get to know her. And it's so sad because, you know, he never got to know the love that she truly did. So our journey is finding out and letting him know how much he was loved.
Absolutely. You know, I think it's really interesting, too, that, you know, a lot of this is American culture. We look at other cultures. If you really expand your eyes, you know, you look over like in Africa, you know, in different cultures. Man, it's so community-based that these kids will be walking down the street and they'll just walk into a house and start sitting down at the table and eating, and they'll just address those people as mom and dad. And it's like, who's their parents? And if you go and you ask that question in that community or that tribe or culture, they'll say, anyone that's in the community is mom and dad. You know, whole different perception. So, again, thinking about our culture and how in this particular culture, we have become so isolated and individualized. We don't have that collectivism approach to our family dynamics. And unfortunately, we suffer for it. And when there's, you know, tragedies and traumas and needs, we suffer for it. There's strength in community. And so I often will work with adoptive parents on that and reminding them that, look, you do need to connect. You do need to build a community. You need support. Your children need support. And you need to recognize that it does take a village, because parenting is the hardest job on earth. And you're going to need a break. You're going to need respite. You're going to need advice. You're going to need help. And that's okay. That's okay. That's the beauty of relationships. And you're right. Can never have enough love.
That is so true. And, you know, as a birth mom, I hope if you're listening to this and someone's, brings you to it later, that you hear that these are options for you. And to be able to embrace the fact that it doesn't have to be the way that it might have been perceived for you as of what adoption is. And you know, although there is loss and grief, I mean, we would be crazy to ignore that at any stage of the process. With support and connections, you can come through this and change your life in different ways that you never thought possible.
Absolutely.
As we kind of pull this all together, because it's been a great conversation, Anna, I knew it would be. What do you want to kind of leave as kind of, you know, your statement on loss and grief for birth parents and adoptive families too?
I'm sorry. I'm not sure I understood your question.
Okay. How would you like to kind of, we're kind of pulling this all together and wrapping it up, what is the message you'd like to kind of put out there for birth mothers to kind of to wrap this up, and adoptive families also?
Well, first I would say, you know, congratulations, and I celebrate with you, and I celebrate you, you know, because I think that's not said enough. Because this is definitely, you know, whether you're the birth mom or the adoptive mom or the adoptee, your story is amazing, and your story is beautiful, and it's a testimony, and it needs to be celebrated. And so that's one thing that I think we need to do in the grief and loss process is to remember to celebrate the truths that have led us to where we are and who we are. Mm-hmm. And I would also say, do not fall into isolation. As we've been talking about community, seek support, get connected, find counseling, find support groups. You know, there's lots of resources available on the internet now, blogs, whatever it takes to be able to connect to others that can understand where you're at, that can minister to you where you're at, and continue to support and guide you through that grief and loss. It's so important. It's really, really hard to heal from loss alone. And so I would definitely encourage, you know, wherever you're at in the process to continually seek that support and those resources, and to educate and to be aware and to learn. Definitely on that trauma piece too. I always want to get that mm-hmm. plug in. Make sure you understand trauma. Make yes. sure you understand trauma, because unfortunately today, trauma behaviors are getting a lot of ugly labels they shouldn't be getting.
Right.
And we're prescribing meds like crazy for trauma, and we're mislabeling and misdiagnosing, and we're not really meeting the needs of people that. Where, you know, it just needs to be addressed completely differently. And so being aware of that, and, you know, I speak that to adoptive parents. I speak that to the birth moms and to the children as well. You know, if you're struggling, if you're going through something, you have different emotions, depression, anxiety, all of a sudden learning is an issue, whatever it is, it might be the trauma. And that's what you need to deal with. And, make sure that you do that trauma assessment piece and work through that for your own healing and growth process.
Absolutely. So. And Thrive Counseling with capital mm-hmm. T-H-R-I-V-E. You have
Correct.
A Facebook page. And where are you located, and what is your phone number if somebody wanted to find you?
We are located at 4221 South Martin Luther King in Lansing, Michigan. My number is 517-898-4303.
And I would hope that anyone that is in need of services and can reach out and, open that door. I think that it's challenging in the world to find adoption competent practitioners.
Mm-hmm.
We are becoming more competent across the United States. I always know that when I talk to a therapist, psychologist, psychiatrist, and they're talking about trauma-informed care, and then they're talking about attachment and adoption, they usually have more background. But really, Anna, I cannot stress enough, is an expert in this field and has a passion for it. And I would just encourage, families to, if you're in that area and you're in need of services, to reach out for her and her practice, because I think that's just an amazing resource. So, Anna, I want to thank you so much for being here and sharing with us.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to bring awareness. I'm excited to bring awareness and to shed light and to be able to bring people just, you know, one step closer to their journey to thrive. And to know that, you know, they deserve to be celebrated, and we need to work on this as a community, as a greater community. We need to continue to work on this. So the work you're doing and the work Adoption Associates is doing is so, so imperative, and I'm very grateful that you're doing this, and thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. And to all of our listeners, stay tuned every Friday at 11 o'clock as we move forward. If you ever want to send us a message, you can go to the AAI website, and it's www.adoptionassociates.net or 1-800-677-2367. Tell us your thoughts. Reach out to us on our Facebook page, and we just look forward to talking to you. And everyone, have a great Friday. Thanks again, Anna.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be hard. Like early 90s heavy metal hard.
I'm yelling and screaming and I'm loud. Roar!
Geico makes it easy. You can review and update your policy or report a claim on Geico.com or the Geico mobile app. Because shouldn't we all have a little less stress in our lives?
I'm not even upset about anything!
Oh, wow. You're actually wearing your hair down tonight.
Yeah, because I finally decided that I love my hair. I figured out the solution for my morning frizz, midday poof, and even next day bedhead. It's Frizz E Secret Weapon Touch-Up Cream by John Frieda.
Well, you and your hair look flawless.
Flawless and touchable. Feel.
Oh.
See? It's soft, smooth ends, no flyaways, shiny.
Well, I clearly need to get some because your hair looks amazing.
Frizz E Secret Weapon, only from John Frieda.